their first lobster, and it's got eyeballs. Jesus. And let me have the fevers coming out of you. So Gasser walks up to this guy and says, "Excuse me, sir. We are soldiers about to go overseas. We are in the 3162nd Mess Kit Airborne Repair Battalion. In their last invasion, they had 116% casualties. We're only here for a few moments. We've only got $3. And the man says, "Of course, come in." And the three of us sit down at this round table. And he said, "I will serve you my best seafood dinner on the house, anything for the boys." That, by the way, was a great phrase. When you go to the USO and you pick up this girl, anything for the boys. Paintball, anything. Tuna sandwiches, everything. He would play cards with you. No. So I'm sitting there at the seafood, and he brings me the lobster. Gasser's got a lobster. And Elkins, who, by the way, is a next fight, was game for anything. Elkins grabbed the lobster. None of us know how to eat it. Elkins grabbed the lobster and bit it. You know, and it went crunch, and you could hear the lobster went, "Ah!" Gasser said, "Geez, I don't know whether that's right, Elkins." The man comes up, "Excuse me, I'll show you how to do this." Opens the tails, you know, and he pops them off, and he takes the little fork, you know, the little itty bitty forks you get them. He pulls it up and says, "Well, here is the lobster tail. Consider one of the great devils." Now, you know, my open claws. He takes this nut crack. He says, "Well, takes this beautiful piece of that meat." And he does it all three of us. This man, by the way, had a classic jersey named Vinny. It was that, by the way, it was that night that I learned that almost everybody in Jersey name is named Vinny. Or if they aren't named Vinny, have a cousin named Vinny. There's a Vinny in every man's world in Jersey. And so Vinny opens up our lobsters. And then next to the lobsters, there was this elegant fillet of salt. This is a seafood dinner. And he had steamed clams. I said, "How do you eat that?" He says, "Watch this." Takes a little fork, takes one of the clams out, dips it in the butter. He says, "Try this." Something moved deep inside. When did I realize it was the end of my child? At the beginning of a whole world that stretched out endlessly to heaven. My poor mother back home with her meatloaf. By the way, her specialty was the meatloaf with sliced olives on it. That was her part. I tasted this plenty. My God, I never tasted anything like it. And butter, was that salt and that little taste of the sea? Never had the sea in the end. Well, 15 minutes later, Gasser and myself and Elkins had put away the most fantastic seafood dinner that any of us had ever seen, which incidentally was the first one that any of us had ever seen. At that point, Vinny came over and said, "How was it, gentlemen?" Gasser says, "Fantastic." Elkins said, "Man, you know, he's a pilot, you know." I said, "Gee, that was good." And Vinny said, "Would you like to do it again?" Gasser said, "Yeah." That afternoon, me and Elton and Gasser had between us 6 seafood dinners. I mean, complete with, you know, those little rock crackers with the Elkins is filled with steam clams. Shepherd is filled with the whole damn bed. And you know, it's working. It's festering. It's like, oh, hissing. The three of us have had 15 beers together. You ever poured about five or six bottles of Rheingold on top of six seafood dinners? Stirred it up. Heated it up a little bit.
We're sitting in these three seats.
fire like this. You know, like this meat in his blood. Well, I always remember her name is Betty. She's from Kingsbury. And I'll bet somewhere in Jersey tonight there's this nice auntie lady. She's Aunt Betty. And her nieces and nephews have no idea of what kind of a hellish life she lives. And in front of me is Gasser and this tall, thin girl with large teeth. And at the other end of the car, is Elkins. And Elkins is sitting with this short, fat girl that had like a mop on her head. See? when you're 17 and you're in the Army, you don't worry about it, so you grab, you know? So the three of us are sitting across, me and we're all in the line. Here's the girls. Now this guy with the false teeth, what's in? He's got all them bars down? Let's see you guys, come on. Check that bar, soldier. I said, okay, come on, I don't need this guy. He says, check the bar. So I cracked my blue, realizing this guy was not kidding. God only knows what would have happened if I hadn't had that bar down. He says, all right, here we go, guys, let's go. And we start to fucking drink, come on. We go. I'm looking down and I see the ocean and I see all this beautiful countryside around me. I take Betty's hand and say, oh, such a man. We get up to the top and suddenly this son of a bitch goes, whoa! It just makes a flip. And I'm upside down looking down at my feet. Then it flips up and then goes in over everyone's and then heads down. And I start going down like this and all of a sudden I can feel something happen. We hit the bottom again, and I see this guy looking at me. He sees us go by. We start climbing, and we're climbing, you know, the various ways of strength. Centrifugal force, you know, is hardly yet understood. See, it took this thing at least three revolutions to bring your lower intestine out through your ears.
Ha ha ha! Jersey.
You guys stay on. You got a free ride. You don't know. 3162nd Airport mess kit repair. Telling you goddamn cake. The Yippie said, oh. Okay, guys. He said, I don't want to bother guys like you. Heading for hell. I brushed some cauliflower off his head. Elton reaches in his pocket and hits the switch. His batteries were low. I let used beer at short amount. But they glowed dimly through the mashed potatoes with the gravy and the peas. And the MP said, now look, I don't blame you guys for hanging with us. He says, God, I wish I were going with you. He said, get in a bus and don't cause no trouble. So the three of us got in the bus in the night and headed back to Fort Myer. Gasson fell asleep. Elton slid down in the seat. And I'm sitting on it. I had a few quick dry heaves. That's just a practice heave. You know what? That's a heave that comes along in case there's anything left. Nothing comes up. Some sour stuff comes out of your nose. Now, wait a minute. This is in terrible taste. But I want to tell you, you were not promised a rose garden here. I am not Joan Baez. I cut it like it is. And that night, the three of us went in our barracks and lay there, stinking to high head. I just dropped my uniform. I just went, there I am in my shorts, my dog tags, stripped down to the barest essential. Gasser's in the bunk ahead, right up top. He climbed up, he's laying up there. Over there's Elkins. Elkins was strange. At that moment, he began to have a curious fit of deep, almost religious purpose. No, they had curious organ tones. Like something profound was trying to get out of it. Just deep groans, like the voice of God or something. And Gasser said from the top bunk, he says, wasn't that great, guys? Now later, I says, yeah, it was. That's what life is about. It's about walking around and sweating, getting bit by things, eating lobsters, looking at women, living, going around in this car, up and down, up and down. It was then that I knew my Uncle Carl. For the first time, I knew that my Uncle Carl was a man who was searching. And something late at night, after a second, fifth JV, he was drawn to the gigantic parachute ride. Why? Who knows what goes on in the deep, stygian heart of man? It's like when I was about 10. The very first time that I discovered what could be called true disillusionment. How many of you feel that your life is not yet your real life? Has not yet begun. Not when I'm just screwing around. You're ad-libbing. How many of you have had a faint suspicion at times that other people's lives truly are official? They know where they're going. people actually understand and like Alan. This is a profound discovery. And then there are the others, the same people. You wonder what the hell it's all about? Well, I'm 10 years old, see, and I've lived every night at 5:15 with this radio. Now, I wasn't a radio listener as a kid, you must understand. And I'm going to have to tell you the story that has been requested by at least 15 people in this audience before tonight's show. Every night at 5:15, I lived on the south side of Chicago, you know, and it took guts just to be a kid. By the time I was 10, in this town, when you say Indiana, you people use the term Indiana as if you know about it. You think of fields of corn. The Indiana that I came from made Newark look like Palm Beach. I came from the steel mill Indiana. Mean tough. By the age of 10, I could siphon gas in solid darkness. And by the taste of the gas, I could tell you the brand. My favorite was Texaco. Regular. After dinner, it was a late My idea of a good dessert gasoline was Gulf. Sweet. It's an old lady's gas. But the true aficionados, the real aficionados, go for Standard Oil High Test. Neat. And when you're sipping Standard Oil High Test out of a rubber hose at 10 o'clock at night behind Mrs. Anderson's pine, the fumes start drifting from your brain. You begin to see the flowers of evening wild in there. Fleur de mer, fleur de mer. Pull it there. The flowers and gasoline do that. So every night at 5:15, to escape that kind of world, I used to come home with this radio on top of the refrigerator. It was white. It said Night Radio, K-N-I-G-H-T. It was white plastic and had an airplane dial and came from the factory already cracked.
Like
it
so.
Came with white adhesive tape with thumbprints on the tape. And when you turn the radio on, it would go, you had a hum, and you can hear with Bing Crosby and the Holy Flower. And my mother would be hanging over a sink. My mother, by the way, all through the first 14 years of my life, if I ever pictured her now, right now, if you ever look in your room, you know, you've got millions of pictures on your mind, like thousands of your own private color film slides. And if I said to you, picture your mother now, you would see a private picture that is your own picture. If you have a sister or a brother and you said that same thing to them, they'd see a different mother. No, they wouldn't. So every time when you say to me, Mother, I see my mother standing over the sink in the kitchen, it's always about 6:15. She's wearing this kind of once from Chinese red chenille bathroom. And she's got her hair up in these lumen reestates. Oh, yes, tonight when we go out for the live Oldsmobile. drama that was being played out. My old man squatting in the front seat wearing his Chicago White Sox fan t-shirt. Hasn't shaved for 2 days. My kid brother sitting back of my mouth. I'm watching the old man drive. And he would be communicating out of the window of the olds on the driver's side. When this fellow driver flicks of his hand. And apparently, he had an entire vocabulary of indescribable obscenities. Just with his hand. And of course, all the other drivers are sitting in the back. They're bouncing along and all. And I'm studying under a basher, my old man. He used to shift that car. Oh, God, he loved to shift up and down and sideways. He loved one thing about the Olds. It had bad kingpins. And he loved it. We hit a railroad track, and the Olds would start to shift. You'd see his shoulder muscles bulge. He brings that son of a bitch back on the controller. He loved it. My mother would say, why don't you get that fixed? Then he'd hear, ooh. Then he'd say, mind your own goddamn business. You take care of the sink, I'll take care of yours. So here it is, it's 6 o'clock at night. I see my mother over the sink. She's got her pillow pad in the right hand.
There it is.
He always had this classical Midwestern mother myth that he could get the ultimate pillow pad. He could pillow away all the evil, all the dirt in the world. You see it, by the way, in commercials. You see those manic looking women always looking down at how their floor shines, bright and shiny, cleaner than clean, whiter than white. There's one great commercial, this lady's crawling around what looks like a toilet bowl. Oh, I miss so many old great classical commercials. I miss the preparation H-Man. Remember he used to sit there behind his desk with all these books behind? Then he'd say, yes, relieves itching. We have medical proof. And he'd reach back and take out a book that said, medical proof. He'd say, yeah, it's true. They wouldn't say it if it wasn't true. And I always, as a kid, I used to see these earliest commercials. I used to imagine them doing the medical proof. You know, all these guys with different preparations are scratching. And there's one proud man that says H on the media. And the doctor's writing it down. He says, ah, number 7, H. He says, oh, yes, one of my favorite commercials I haven't seen for years. I remember the little guy that used to roll around inside the John? Remember the lady that you know, would open up on her face and she says, oh, my heavens, blue water. Blue water. Every time I saw that commercial, it used to go through my mind, my God, blue water. They used to warn us about that in the Army. Some of you are laughing, others look mystified. Let it be that way. And then she would take the top off and there would be this little guy rolling around in a rowboat in the yacht and for some reason wearing a yachting cap. That was a nice touch, really surreal. And there was a marimba band in his little boat flat away. Oh, God, that talk about the theater of the absurd. So these little pictures are our private gallery images of existence. My mother hanging over the sink at 6 o'clock at night. She's wearing her chenille bathrobe with a little bit of petrified egg in the belt. It's her official badge of motherhood. For millions of eggs she has made for millions of kids at breakfast. My brother, who never ate anything for 7 years. And she's looking down in the sink. And the sink goes, the old man looks up. smart preacher. With a head by wheat socks, drop pear and wheat. Almost impossible. Socks were 37 games out of first, and it was the first week of May. Headline reads, Luke Appling strokes 400-foot record foul ball. And then my mother looks down into the sink again. The sink waits for a moment. You know that the Orientals believe that things have souls. I was in India one night, and I was in a cab. This little, tiny new cab. Battered, old, 20-year-old car. And this guy had a wreath hanging on the hood. And I said, what is the wreath? Also, he said, it's a day to celebrate the soul of the machine. I said, celebrate the soul of the machine? He says, us, yes. He said, the machine did me much all year. I must honor and give honor to the soul. So things are mine. You've suspected that goddamn pacer of that reeks. My old man had a Hudson. Used to sit in the garage and mutter. With the key off, you can hear it just. Late at night, you can hear it out there drinking gas. And so my mother's thing was the sink. And the sink would pause and go. And my mother knew that the next time I did it, it was going to happen. The old man looks up and waits. My kid brother stops playing with the mashed potatoes. And sure enough, at the third beat, the sink goes. And up comes Mrs. Brewer's coffee grounds. From the next door. We've traded coffee grounds for years. One late night, Sir John blew up. Mr. Brewer had come home drunk, and we got it. But see, we all have our escapes, all sets of escapes. And mine is this. At 5:15 every day, on the radio, would come this radio show. I didn't listen to the radio ever, but this thing got me. Ed's theme song. Who's that dude? Chad Bones. The one with curly auburn eyes. Who I see? It's little orphan Annie. What about me? How's Sandy go? What's more? Get your audience all saying ARF again. Now, that doesn't feel good. You haven't ARFed in years. A lot of you wouldn't even do it now. You're sitting there, tight girdles and all that. And so here it is, every night at 5:15, and they come on with this theme song. And then this voice would come on. Hello, fellas and gals. This is Pierre Andre. And welcome to another adventure of Little Orphan Annie and her pals, featuring Sandy. All right, fellas and gals, tonight, Little Orphan Annie will have a secret message for all of you members of the Secret Society. And you can become a member of the Secret Society by sending in the silver inner seal of a can of delicious bread. Malted milk tasting oval tea. Then they would start the adventure. They had this great adventure. They would play cards. There were always in caves. There were no guys in their world excited. You members of the secret circle, I'm Lord Benetti's special group of friends. Get out your secret decoder pin and set your pin to P12. You will have a message from Annie herself, and for those of you who are not members of the secret circle, send in a silver inner seal full of ham, delicious, rich, almond milk tasting, oval things. All right, here's the message. 7. 19. 8. 6. He could get more out of numbers than Orson Welles gets out of clean air. 14. 12. 19. 8. 3. 46. 2. And there are all the gals of the message for Annie herself. And don't tell the person who is a non-member. This is for members only. We will see you again tomorrow night. When you hear, is that the new channel? The one with curly fireballs. It's time.
Circle, or you're a forever Pepsi-Cola creature.
story. How about some old people? I said, now look. Milk is good enough. Well, you know that bit. By the way, that was only the first of millions of kids that were going to be run on commercials. So after about 3 weeks, I'm in the store with my mother. She said, all right, Mr. Mattingly, please, one can of family-sized old pea.
He's going to drink all of
them. This is a meatloaf fan. He says, old pea, sure? She says, yes. It's okay. He says, Pete, bring me that can of old pea. We had it for years back then. So Pete brings the can of old pea out, and that night, I had sent away my silver inner seat. Comes right inside the key, and he just cut it right out, sent it away to Little Orphan Annie, Checkerboard Square, Minneapolis. And I began to wait. That night at supper, my mother said, well, Jeannie, how about some more? And I could hardly wait, you know, my first big drink of rich chocolatey, delicious malted milk tastes healthy. She gives me this great big glass of milk, and she reads the instructions and says, two tablespoons per glass of milk for a rich chocolatey drink. So she takes the teaspoons and drops it into the oil. She drops it right in the milk, and I'm sitting there, see my kid brother sitting over here, look. This is my can of oil. With that, the old thing lands in the milk and goes right to the pot. Like thousands of little brown beans. So my mother says, stir it up. So I take the spoon, I stir it up. I figure it's going to look like a mold of milk, you know. I stir it up. Now all that happens is the babies go out of the room. So then I stir it, they go faster. Well, about 10 minutes of stirring, and now a few little babies are coming to the top, some are on the bottom, some are in the middle going around. And I picked up my glass. This was the beginning of the modern world for me. It was the new shepherd. Up to this point, I figured if you did the right things, you could be here. You could be in the secret circle. I take this glass and I sip. My mouth, my mind, my psyche ready for this rich, delicious, chocolate, malted milk-like elixir. My mother knew. She waited. She said, now look, you're going to drink all that. You're going to drink the whole can. And from that minute on, for 2 years, every meal I had Ovaltine. And Ovaltine, I'll never forget the taste. It tasted like a vaguely fermented, just kind of vaguely fermented milk of magnesium. You know, it's funny, you get used to things. I got some, I liked it years later. What I do now is mix it with vodka. By the way, they call that Little Orphan Annie's downfall. Anyway, I am drinking this guy. Oh, this Ovaltine just absolutely did not. I hated it. I was so disappointed. You know, if I had not had my mind set on such a beautiful thing, I wouldn't have minded it. But now I was drinking this. Even my brother stopped whining. He didn't want it. He wanted everything I got. He didn't want this. So every night I'd sit down and I'd drink my Ovaltine. I'd drink it. Gritting my teeth. It's like eating cold cream of wheat. 3 weeks later, in the mail came my Little Orphan Annie's secret to color. It was gold. It had a gold plastic simulated decoder knob. That number is all around. It was beautiful. It had a little pin on the back. It was supposed to wear it inside your sweater where other people couldn't see it. This was secret. secret circle in good standing to be given all the rights and privileges accruing thereto. Gene Parker Show. Sign, Pierre Andre. Countersign, Art. Let's go. It's my first membership card. By the way, I still have it. Keep it in my wallet. You never know when something might come up. That night I sat in. I had my Indian head tablet out with the blue lights. I had my number two yellow Ticonderoga pencil. By the way, how many of you like to eat the erasers off of Ticonderoga pencil? Well, my friend Schwartz would eat the paint. He loved to eat that paint. Stunted his rope. He didn't carry a level. That night, I sat there ready for my first message, and Pierre Andre came on and said, "All right, fellas and gals, here's a message tonight from Little Orphan Annie for the members only. Kids, set your pin tonight at C-14. Here is the message. All right. 12, 34, 16, 8, 9, 6. Then I realized that a true secret message was in fact coming to me that would change my life forever. That would make me from a potential Johnny Carson to a guy that would perform in Clinton on a hot night." You see, Johnny Carson believes it all. Johnny Carson is a Reader's Digest reader, and you can't imagine him owning his own cockroaches. The rest is forever, go through life trying to get that pin. Decodes that secret, that lock that keeps us out of the inner circle. I got a pin this night. And Pierre Andre says, 14, 12, and that is the message, kids. Don't tell people who are not members about this secret message. It's for you only. And you'll see it tomorrow night. And once again, you hear, there's that little chat. The velvet curtain all drops. You'll see it's little Robin Hood. What the reason? Boom, boom, boom. 2.5 minutes later, I am in the only room in the house where a boy at 9 can decode in flights. I got the door locked. And I'm squatting down there. Of course, any time I came into that room, instantly my brother would tell me, "I gotta go." My brother would say, "Hurry up, Randy's gotta go." He can make his nose run through. Be sure. 16. Out here to tell you that it's all in the